Terry Savage, the financial columnist, is our guest, talking Monday about bungee cord day, and I think I know why. Hi, Terry.
Hi. It was 2 days of bungee cords. 2 days. It was amazing. That's the only, I've been trying to think of what could have done that. Down 1,000, 1,100, actually, on Monday, winding up, back up 100, then down 800, and then back almost to even. It's been a crazy market. But I heard something this morning, and I think that explains it. And credit due to the source. We should get Tom Sosnoff of Tasty Trade on. Tom Sosnoff, I knew from the old days at the CBOE when I was a terrible trader, which is why I don't do that. And he created two companies, Thinkorswim, which he sold for God knows how many gazillion dollars. And now he has a trading platform and brokerage firm called Tasty Trade. It's weird. T-A-S-T-E-E. Trade. And he was saying this morning that something major has changed. It used to be the smart money, the big institutions, you know, they knew what they were doing. And the individual investor was like, okay, the dumb money left behind, sort of. And he said that this major change to bring retail traders into the market, and of course, that's his platform, retail traders. And we're not talking about investors, traders. And he said that what happened Monday was that these retail traders, number one, they're part of the gaming generation. They can make a click, move money very quickly. They've been brought up to do that, to make quick decisions. And when the market got so oversold, and it fell because there was sort of a gap, nobody had below the market orders to stem the decline, they jumped in, bought the bottom, and the market moved up quickly because of this vacuum. And he said again yesterday. And so that maybe now the smart money, I'm not talking long term, I have no idea about that, but our next guest does. But maybe that what's going on in the day-to-day market is not just the Robin Hood people, but a lot of people who've gotten involved in trading are able to move quickly, and that springs the market like that bungee jump.
Are these the GameStop people, that sort of thing?
Not just the GameStop people. I think that what you're seeing is there are a lot of individuals who've decided, I'm going to be a trader. They're not the people that you, I think, and I usually talk to who are, it's my 401k, when can I retire people.
Yeah, right.
There are people who actually think of this as a way to make a living, who have grown up with technology, they have grown up with taking risk in all this gaming, and they are actually full-time trading. And because big institutions have to say, well, is this on our buy list? Shall we have a committee meeting and vote to add 1%? Mm-hmm. They're just jumping in when they see opportunity. And that makes the market not only more volatile, but it creates a kind of velocity inside the market for these moves to go back and forth.
Are you
in other words, they're the smart money now.
Yeah, well, are you saying that the presence of these people is a good thing or a bad thing, or are you neutral?
Well, I'm a market person, and I always believe that liquidity is good for a market. So the more participants, the better and more accurate a market can be. But if you know that's what's going on, that the market is not dominated anymore directionally so much by big, lumbering institutions and pension funds, but that there are so many now of these individual traders that at the margins they can make a difference. You have to be aware of that. You have to adjust your emotions, by the way. If you're the long-term, oh my gosh, it's my 401k. Hey, just put that $300 in this month and next month. Now, the next big question is, but really, where are we going? I mean, really, have we messed up? Is the Fed going to step in an hour and say, hey, we're not worried about the markets falling. We've got inflation. We're going to raise rates. Where are we going? And every year, you know, we have that Executives Club Economic Forecast. And our best forecaster for years has been the most bullish, Dr. Bob Fralick, who came on last year and told us that in 2021, the Dow would go to 401k, which was 40,100. So I asked him that 2 weeks ago at our luncheon, and now you get to ask him that when he joins us.
It was last April that Dr. Bob Fralick on this show said this.
We'll cross 40,000 by the end of the year. So when we get to the end of the year, my actual forecast, so everyone can remember it, is 401k, just like your retirement account. So 40,100, clear another 20% in the market from here. So, I mean, the best is not behind us. The best is in front of us.
Terry Savage is with us, as is Dr. Bob Fralick. Dr. Bob, welcome to WGN Radio again.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
All right, Terry, what do we say?
No, everybody wants to know. Dr. Bob, what happened, and what do you think now?
Well, you know, I spent 40 years as a Wall Street strategist, and basically what that means is I'm supposed to predict what's going to happen to the markets today, tomorrow, next month, next year. And you don't last 40 years without developing a pretty thick skin. And you also have to learn to reframe the issue. So the issue really is, was I wrong or was I early? I would say I wasn't wrong. I was early. I think that investors have to realize what a year we had last year. I mean, the Dow, even though it didn't get 40,000 like I said it would, it was up 18%. You know, the long-term historic average for the stock market is 8%. So an 18% return is a really good return. And I'll give you another perspective. If you look back over the last 14 years, from 2008 to last year, and look at the S&P 500 versus the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the Dow Jones Industrial Average of those 30 stocks, they outperformed the S&P 500 35% of the time. If last year all the Dow did was equal the S&P 500, would be over 40,000 today. So it may sound outlandish. In reality, to get to where we are today, to there, we're only talking about 16%. And with all the pent-up demand that we have in the marketplace and the economy, I think it's very doable.
Dr. Bob, do you think you would have been right were it not for Omicron, or was it supply chain? What derailed your prediction?
Two things that would derail the prediction that made me a little early. The first is you hit it on the head. I when we were together last April, I thought the worst was behind us with COVID. I mean, I didn't see the second Delta wave coming and the next Omicron wave coming. And, you know, I think that really, you know, slowed things down much greater than I anticipated. I think it gave a second hit to small businesses. So I missed that sort of second wave of COVID. The other thing that really I underestimated, I knew we were going to have some inflation. Man, I never thought last April we were going to be facing 7% inflation. I mean, you knew we had to have some because of all the programs that the government was doing in response to COVID. But what I underestimated is how basically every business has jumped on the bandwagon for the supply chain crisis, even those that don't even get supplies from outside the United States. You know, there's nowhere to hide. You can't, like, just go for a Buy American company because they're putting fuel surtax charges in to offset the high price of gasoline. So it was those two things. It was that I didn't see COVID staying with us as long as it did, and I certainly didn't see the runaway inflation that we're getting faced with today. So those were the two things that held my number back.
So, Dr. Bob, let's look forward. You still believe 40,100 is the target for this year, 2022, and or even higher? Who knows, given you? And what makes that happen when right now people are worried about the Fed raising rates and volatility in the market and inflation again and again and earnings? So are you still bullish? Where to and why?
I am. And not that they shouldn't be worried. I'm worried. I mean, look at the market hates uncertainty. So just the prospect of, oh my gosh, there could be a war, that's enough uncertainty to drive volatility in the market. And beyond that, I mean, yes, I'm worried about inflation and I'm worried about rate hikes. But at the end of the day, I think the strength of our underlying economy and the pent-up demand, we have not had this much pent-up demand. People held prisoners in their own house for like the last 2 years, it feels like. I mean, people can't wait to get their life back to normal and go out and shop and eat and drink and have fun. I don't know that anyone on Wall Street can figure out a calculation for what's that going to do when we turn that corner. I think it's going to be extremely bullish for our stock market. I think that across the board, companies are going to do much better than people are thinking because we've never, ever, ever had this much pent-up demand in our economy as we have today.
Well, I would take 40,000 at the end of the year.
Yeah, so what's your target, Dr. Bob? How high could it go?
It is. I'm sticking right with it. 40,100. I mean, I think we're going to see, as I said earlier, it's you know, that'd be another 5,500 points on the market. So that'd be 16% from here. I think it's very doable. I think the Fed will raise rates, but from a historic basis, though, rates are still going to be fundamentally low, extremely low in terms of helping to fuel the stock market. Yeah. And the other thing, even though I think inflation's going up, we're not going to be at that 7%. I mean, we're not going to be at the Fed's target either at 2.5. You know, I think we may be at 3, closer to 4. But I think with the strength of the economy, with still relative low interest rates, even with an uptick in inflation, I think the market really has a lot going for it.
Let me ask you one quick question on behalf of all the, what I call my little old ladies, I'm one of them now, I guess, who are saying, but I'm still getting 0.5% in my CDs. What do these people do? They don't want to take risk. They didn't like yesterday or the day before.
Yeah, Terry, that's the toughest question because, I mean, the you know, asset allocation used to be stocks, bonds, and cash, and that's when you used to get paid to be in cash, and today you're just not getting paid to be in cash. And so, you know, when you're getting 0.5%, or even if you were lucky enough to get 1%, but inflation's at 4%, all you're doing is guaranteeing you're going to lose money by not being in the market. And so, you know, my answer to that is, no matter what age you are, if you can get the advice of a financial professional instead of trying to do it alone, that would be a great help. But to me, it always comes down to three basic principles. You got to follow the principles of asset allocation. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. I think the second principle is you've got to be diversified. Even though I'm so bullish on the stock market, I want you to be diversified in the stock market. Some large cap names, mid cap names, small cap names, different sectors, because as some go down, others go up. And maybe the third and most important principle is dollar cost averaging. Don't try to time the market. Don't try to guess the market. Don't put all your money in today or tomorrow. Put it in over the course of a year's time, and you basically assure yourself that you'll catch some real value in the market. You may overpay a little bit, but you're going to underpay and catch great value as well. So to me, as you're looking at the market, you know, remember asset allocation, remember to stay diversified, and most important, when you come in, don't go all in. Don't bet your money at the same time. You want a dollar cost average into this market.
What's your short answer to? Do the midterms matter to your prediction at all, Dr. Bob?
I think the midterms always matter. I think they'll matter to sectors. I don't think they'll matter to the overall market. And that gets back to my point that you want to be diversified by sector, because if there is a change in leadership in the House and the Senate, you know, it's going to be reflected more in the sectors of the market. Someone may say, oh, less regulations if the Republicans make a move here. So maybe we want to be more in utilities, or maybe we want to be more in financial services because now they're not going to be regulated as much. Mm-hmm, I don't think it's going to impact the overall market, but it's certainly going to impact the winners and losers within the market.
Okay. Terry, I'm enjoying the bull here.
Yeah, I thought I would bring you something. I said something nice for lunch today. Dr. Bob is also, I want to remind everybody, the owner of the Kane County Cougars,
yep,
the semi-pro baseball team. And last year they had to operate at 50% capacity. It's a measure of Dr. Bob's genius that they're still alive, and more than kicking, they're batting. And so when does it open, Dr. Bob?
Friday the 13th, May the 13th is opening night. So I would love to see you all at the ballpark, and thank you for that plug for my small business. And I, in return, would love to plug small business. I'll tell you, anything you can do when you're out shopping that you can help some of your local small businesses would be greatly appreciated. These businesses are still under a lot of pressure. That doesn't mean you shouldn't buy from the big stores as well, but boy, whatever you could do to help these community-based companies, it'd be well worth it.
Dr. Bob Frelick, as always, thank you. Let's not wait another year to have you on the show. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it, and see you all at 401K.
All right, Terry, let's pause and let's let you do what you do for our listeners as well in just a minute. 312-981-7200 is the telephone number. 312-981-7200. Call or text right now with your question or comment for Terry, and we'll do the best we can to help you out. If you just joined us, Terry and I were just visiting with Dr. Bob Frelick, and he is the financial guru and owner of the King County Cougars, who said, hey, the market will still hit 40,100. We didn't do it on December 31st, But he thinks by the end of this year, we'll pick up another 5,000 points, Terry. That's a nice bull.
Yeah, I'm basking in the glow of that. Dr. Bob is, oh my God, he's delivered investment speeches in 107 different countries. He's been on the global asset management, management of things like Deutsche Bank, Hartford, and Kemper funds. He's written, like, I think it's the 6 books that have been translated into 10 different languages. He's been around. So I'm just basking in the glow. Let's get the questions.
Well, I don't have any for you yet.
You don't?
I don't have one.
Nobody. Oh, you know why? Because I think everybody was just stunned by listening to Dr. Bob.
Well, I appreciate his optimism. I mean, listen, I love it when guys like you talk like that, but there's people on the other side of the fence, too, and I try and balance the two.
Well, okay, we'll try and get you Jeremy Grantham.
No, I don't want him.
You know who he is?
Is he the
he
guy?
He just wrote a report that says we're in an epic bubble. And the fourth super bubble of the last 100 years, and our deviation from the exponential growth trend of the markets is now higher by far. At the dot-com crash, it was 104.4, just the number, the magnitude, and it's 153.9 now. We are on the edge of an epic bubble and breakdown. So, yes, you can find other people.
Well, I'm not looking for bad news. I'm just
looking for... But, you know, I just believe in America. I believe you keep investing. But I sent out a newsletter called The Bungee Jump Stock Market to you know, when you go to terrysavage.com, it says put your name and email here. I don't charge for it. I don't have a regular schedule. Send it out when I can feel your heartbeat saying, oh my God, what's going on? And I pointed out, traders are having a field day. There's so much volatility. They love it. That's their game. And I think the new gamers are the millennial generation,
yeah,
who grew up playing games. But I think I talk a lot to baby boomers too, or to those who are working hard and don't want to make the stock market their daily game, and just say, hey, go buy the S&P 500 stock index fund. You know, 40 years ago today, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was still under 1,000. So whether we're at 34,000 or 35,000, if you'd done a Rip Van Winkle, and if you could have bought the whole Dow, and yes, it's changed over the years, and gone to sleep, however, would you be very happy that you put $1,000 away, or $10,000, or $100,000, and you then had $3 million, you know?
Okay, now all our lines are busy. 312-981-7200. So let's get started with Bob and Terry Savage. Bob, what can we do for you? You're on the air.
Good afternoon. Thank you for your help, as always. If we're blessed and lucky enough to have money on the sidelines, is now a good time to put it to work in the stock market?
Depends on who you listen to. If you're trading, you're trying to pick bottoms and tops, you have to be right 3 times. When to get in, when to get out, and when to get back in again. I find that, from my own personal experience, impossible. So you heard Dr. Bob say that. If you really have money and you really believe what he said about the future, and if you had $10,000, put $1,000 in on the 1st of February, March, April, May for the rest of the year, and you'll never pick the top, but you'll never pick the bottom.
How long do you have to wait there, Bob?
Maybe 10 years until retirement, and who knows how long after that.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's a great point. Yeah, you need it
well,
for when you're about to die, not for when you're about to start living again.
Do you have an IRA? Do you have an IRA or 401k?
Yes, is your, both.
Both. And your 401k is in stocks?
A big chunk of it is in stocks in the 401k. There's other cash, literally, though, on the sidelines. And I heard your discussion before about what to do with cash right now. It's hard to make money if you're not in equities, right?
Yeah, but if you knew you could buy them lower, if you knew for a fact, you'd wait.
Well, but
we
in 10 years, do either of you think that the Dow will be higher than 35,000?
Well, let me put it this way. There's never been a going back to 1926, a 20-year period where a diversified stock portfolio, call it the S&P 500, with dividends reinvested, never been a 20-year period, 26 to 46, 52 to 72, not one where you would have lost money, even adjusted for inflation. So I know you're going to need stocks while you're in retirement. It just depends on the balance that you have inside your other investments, too.
Hmm. Okay.
I agree with you both. Thank you so much.
Yeah, use that as best you can. This is Renee. She's got a question about, I think, a Roth IRA. Hey, Renee, you're on WGN.
Good morning. Just a huge thank you to Terry for being responsive on email. It's very much appreciated, first of all. I had a quick question regarding a Roth IRA. My mother will be gifting me the Roth IRA once she's in a terminal illness situation. And she wanted to know if you have more than 10 years or 10 years to handle the funds differently.
Well, stop.
A Roth she's, versus a traditional.
Okay, stop. She is going to not gift it to you. Okay, she's going to make you the beneficiary, and you will get it upon her death. Okay, she's not gifting it to you. She's not changing the name or anything else. Okay, and that's number one, and you got to make sure you don't change any names on it. You must have a full distribution of your IRA under new rules. With a Roth, now with any IRA. And if you have a Roth, you don't have RMDs, but now, since 2019, the distribution period is 10 years. So you'll open an inherited IRA, and you can either stretch out distributions, or you can get it fully taken out by 10 years.
But you have to deplete it in its entirety within 10 years. Is that what you're saying?
You do, as long as you're not a spouse.
And she's not.
Yeah.
Does that help, Renee?
Okay, it does, but, and I thank you very much.
Yeah,
you
just wait. You'll call the custodian. Now we're getting off, but you'll call her custodian, Fidelity, Vanguard, whoever it is. You'll have to give them a copy of the death certificate, and they will transfer it into your inherited IRA. You can take some out, all out, whenever you want, but you must get it all out in 10 years.
17.3 seconds left. Hey, Terry, where's the best place for a college student to learn about investing?
Online. My God, you can't even begin to tell you where.
I thought you were going to throw your book at them.
Oh, you know what? Every college graduate should have a copy of The Savage Truth on Money. The basic principles, the truths have remained unchanged forever. And you'll learn a lot about the basics before you get started and learn about the problems.
I think that's good advice. That's Terry Savage, terrysavage.com. Thanks for bringing Dr. Bob on again, Terry.
Oh, that was fun. We'll get him back.
That's Terry Savage. She joins us on Wednesdays. It's 12:44. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio. And now more business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Mars Wrigley is preparing to close its chocolate plant on Chicago's west side, winding down operations over the next 2 years. The company says the Galewood facility's 280 employees will be able to apply for open positions within the company. It does have other locations in the Chicago area, including its global headquarters. The Galewood facility produces several different kinds of chocolate candy. Mars Wrigley makes M&M's, Twix, Snickers, Milky Way, and Skittles. Boeing has reported its third straight annual loss. The company lost almost $4.3 billion last year due to multiple issues, including the pandemic and its effect on the aviation industry, and after taking a big charge against earnings to cover delays in delivering the 787 jetliner and compensation for airlines that are still waiting to get those planes. As for the latest quarter, Boeing had positive cash flow, that despite revenue coming in below expectations. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
With the business of food, here's Steve Alexander.
Yeah, with everything else going on in the world, the business world, an announcement by Walmart got shoved off to the side of the news pile. Walmart has invested in a vertical farming company called Plenty. Plenty is based in Northern California, and it got me thinking about a vertical farming company here in Chicago that we featured last March. Wilder Fields is its name, and CEO Jake Cunet loved hearing the news about Walmart.
I think it's a tremendous vote of confidence for the industry.
Cunet's company bought an abandoned Target store in Cal City, which is part of his MO, investing in forgotten communities.
They're typically in food deserts or surrounded by food deserts, abandoned big box space that just becomes an eyesore and blight in neighborhoods. And being able to hire from the local population and create upwardly mobile jobs, I think, is just a really powerful concept.
And in that big shell of a building on East-West Road where racks of clothing used to be, there are now racks of panels where leafy greens are grown. And after many delays because of supply chain and labor issues,
we are on track for our first harvest this spring.
That first crop is already sold and then some.
Yeah, there is a lot more demand than we initially anticipated for this first phase.
He's not at liberty to say who his retail partners are yet, but fans of Wilder Fields include big names like supermarket guru Bob Mariano and Gibson Restaurant CEO Steve Lombardo. And when that old Target store is fully built out and producing?
The Calumet City facility will do about 6 million pounds in annual volume of leafy greens.
Various estimates put the number of acres of farmland it would take to produce that same amount at 300 to 500 acres. But Kune isn't suggesting vertical farming will replace traditional farming, just offer more options with a special advantage of being locally grown.
Freight rates are through the roof. I recently read there are some West Coast producers that are not even shipping their product to the East Coast anymore because the shipping is just cost prohibitive.
WilderFields.com for more information. From the farm to your belly, speaking of leafy greens, today is National Green Juice Day. National Peanut Brittle Day, too. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
On a phone line right now, though, is Dale Buss, the veteran financial journalist and founder and executive director of the Flyover Coalition. Welcome back, Dale. How are you?
Hi, John. Thanks. Great.
Yesterday, was it 2 days ago, we had Tom Gimbel on from the LaSalle Group. He was thinking about that Intel Corporation pledge to spend $100 billion, $20 billion in a plant in Ohio. And he was angry at the city of Chicago for not landing that. He said it's our crime and our taxes. They're going to keep us from getting those sorts of things. You're looking at the same scenario. What's your take on all of that?
Well, I think he's probably right about that in the sense that Illinois is in really no fiscal position to compete, even with other states in the Midwest, for the kind of thing that Intel's doing. And Ohio went after this thing fiercely, you know, over the course of several months, even passing a law that enabled the state, you know, implicitly. It wasn't about Intel explicitly, but the law helped them provide pretty huge financial incentives to Intel. You know, the problem with Illinois, obviously, is the coffers are empty and worse than that. But I do think there's a silver lining, maybe not just for Illinois, but for other states in flyover country, which is basically that Intel has promised to spend, as you said, $20 billion on the initial plant, maybe up to $100 billion on up to six more plants in that same footprint over the next decade. But also, they are going to be creating an ecosystem of suppliers that pretty much looks like it's going to be spread out from Ohio, you know, perhaps hundreds of miles out across the upper Midwest. So that means that places like Illinois, places like Michigan, maybe even Wisconsin, certainly Indiana, Kentucky, all have the chance to benefit from supplier plants that are going to be set up to feed this huge complex, which is going to be unprecedented in its scope. And, you know, to my mind, as I was writing in the chief executive today, it's like it's the industrial equivalent of the Amazon HQ2 a few years ago that went to Virginia.
Yeah, we remember our pitch for that. Is this in response to the lack of infrastructure we had when COVID hit? We couldn't get chips. We still can't for cars. Is this about that?
Yeah, it's definitely about that. Maybe in the short term, you know, that has just strangled automakers. And the fact is, it won't be a few years until the plant's online. So automakers hope to have their situation resolved long before then. But more broadly and more deeply, it's about the decoupling of our supply chains in the U.S. from China and from East Asia in general, and all the chips that are made in places like Malaysia and Taiwan and all over that region. And there's a huge push now, you know, a bipartisan push, really, to get us, as I said, decoupled from China and get more domestic manufacturing. And people didn't necessarily expect it in microchips because the investment is so huge and so technologically intensive. But yet Intel is saying, you know what, this problem is so acute that we think it's worth it to make really the biggest investment they've ever made in this country and one of the biggest investments any manufacturer has ever made in the United States.
Gimbel didn't like it because he doesn't even think Chicago made a pitch for it, maybe because, like you said, the state wasn't financially in a position to play ball. But if that game includes so many incentives that you sort of give away the store, I've never liked that. When that happened to that plant just north of Chicago in Wisconsin, which I think might end up being a bust after all, you sort of hate to see my paying taxes, but these big companies not. And I know they'll employ more people than I will, but you take my point that it'd be nice if we didn't have to give away so much, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's certainly got to be a fear that, you know, the Intel Silicon Heartland, as the CEO called it, could become the next Foxconn Valley, which is what Governor Scott Walker called it in Wisconsin, but I think it's different here in the sense that Intel, you know, is a solid American company, been around for decades, right? Foxconn, huge company as well. But I just think there's a whole bunch of things in place that suggest that this is actually going to happen, not the least of which is it just makes sense from a demand and domestic manufacturing point of view. So the investment by Illinois or anybody else probably is going to be better placed in Intel than, you know, maybe in Foxconn Valley. And then you're absolutely right. That is a cautionary tale for sure. But I just think it's not something that Illinois could have seriously participated in, even though I think there were something like 40 places that made bids.
In Illinois?
No, around the country, I'm sorry.
Yeah, sure. It reminds me of the vying for an auto plant. Will these jobs pay well, do you think? I know I'm looking way down the road here.
They'll absolutely pay well. I think I saw a figure of maybe averaging $100,000+. Because this is highly complex manufacturing. Now, this isn't unskilled labor. And the real crunch is going to be, if Intel does invest, I think it's up to $100 billion, as they said, in the education system in Ohio, I mean, there's still got to be people there to take those jobs. And Ohio is not Silicon Valley. So that's going to be the challenge for Ohio, is to back up the financial incentives they've offered with providing the people and the education system and the digital expertise. If they're able to do that, they're really going to go a long way toward transforming, you know, not just Ohio, but all of the upper Midwest and a lot of flyover country into a, you know, a tech bastion. I mean, I think this is just a potentially really revolutionary development for our region, if not for Illinois.
Darn, I wanted it, and I didn't even know about it until just now. All right, nice to talk to you. Dale Buss, the veteran financial journalist. You read him in a number of places, and you certainly see him at flyovercoalition.org. Dale, we'll visit again. Thanks for your help today.
All right. Thanks, John.